Welcome to Unwrap with J-Rap. I am your host, J-Rap.
So go back to the jungle survival training, some of the stuff we did there with that jungle survival training. The group that I was with, we got dropped off, like I said, in the middle of nowhere in the jungle. It was really cool. It was really remote. I hadn't ever experienced anything quite like that before. I mean, I've been in the woods before. I've been in, you know, places like that in Japan. I've been into, you know, some jungles and such, but and other countries as well. But I'd never been so far out there, and the elements of the jungle, the animals, the temperature, just everything about being out there is not the same as I've ever experienced it. At one point, like I said, they had live ammo, and they're telling us that the reason they have live ammo is because there's tigers out there. So that's terrifying. I remember specifically setting up my personal bedding, if you will, more like a hammock than anybody else's. So I used vines. We used vines for a lot of things, trip wires that they had taught us. These are like vines like you see George of the Jungle or whatever, or Tarzan swinging through the jungle. It's like legit vines. I never knew that obviously I knew they existed, but I didn't know that they were worthy of holding the weight of a human being. I wouldn't swing from one cliff to another with it, but I mean, it works. It's pretty strong. And we would twine it like rope and you know, make it thicker, and then use that for rope or for whatever we needed it for, tripwire in some cases. And one of the things we did was, I set up my hammock by using the stuff that I had. I didn't actually have a hammock. I had it was a mosquito netting and my sleeping bag, which I ended up sleeping on instead of in, because it was super humid and really, really warm. And I had a poncho and a poncho liner that I also used. So I put that all together to make a poncho, to make a hammock, and then use the mosquito netting on the outside. Now, if you don't know or aren't familiar with mosquito netting, how it works, most people probably understand. It's just a net that goes over you. But the thing is, if your skin is up against the mosquito netting, the mosquito can still bite you. So you have to be away from it. So I basically made it so that it was out a little bit. And I was off. The reason why I did a hammock style bed is because when you're on the ground in the jungle, there is, I don't even know how many different insects and things that want to eat you, bite you, poison you, whatever. They're all over the place. And, you know, sitting there in the daytime is one thing because you can kind of see some stuff. But when you're asleep, the last thing you want to think about is something that could, I don't know, that could poison you or bite you that you don't want biting you, or something crawling all, I don't know. Just, I'm not afraid of many insects and things like that, but I don't know what's out there either. And being afraid of the unknown is probably the biggest factor. So I put my hammock up and I slept in that when I did sleep, which wasn't a lot because of the schedule that we had. And I'm the type, if I have the opportunity to sleep during the day when we're in the field, and I have fire watch at night, which again was like security basically, then I would do that. I would rather take a couple naps in the day or you know, when there's nothing going on, we're just pretty much hanging out or waiting for something to happen, then I'll sleep. And then at night, I'll be awake. And it's soothing to sleep in the sound of the jungle sounds or whatever. But at the same time, knowing that when we were doing this training that the Malay Rangers could come in and kidnap one of us or whatever. Not that I didn't trust the people I was with, but some of the other people we were with were not exactly the most stellar Marines. So I would not trust that they would. I mean, it's training. It's not like it's real life. And that's, unfortunately, that's how many of the people think when they go on deployment. It's like, well, this is just training, so I don't have to take it seriously, which, you know, the consequences of that aren't that bad in training, but you train how you fight. And the problem with that is if you're complacent in training, then you're going to be complacent in combat. So, you know, there's obviously, you can debate that and say, well, it's just because it's training and it's stupid, so we don't have to take it seriously. But if it was my life was really on the line and there really was somebody out there, then I would. But at the same time, if you don't have the discipline to do it here, then you don't have the discipline to do it there.
Thousands of people will die.
Point is, I didn't trust some of the guys that were out there, and I didn't want to be the guy to get kidnapped. And I really didn't want to be the guy to be sleeping while somebody else that I was with got kidnapped, because it just looks bad. Like, oh, well, why weren't you awake too? What was my time to sleep? Oh, it was your time to sleep. Okay. So you didn't hear anything? And that's how it would play out. So I stayed awake at night for the most part. When I did sleep, it was when there was two other people. So there was three of us together, and one would be sleeping, the other two would be awake. And when it was my turn to sleep, I would be like up against a tree or whatever with them. And if I dozed off, it was okay, but I pretty much tried to stay awake. So I was awake most of the night when I was out there at night, and some of the time I went and slept. But the time that I did not sleep was when I didn't have a post to do, a fire watch to do, and I wasn't sitting there. I actually went into sleep and didn't sleep was when we heard the actual tiger out in the jungle. That was kind of terrifying, because that thing can eat somebody. And you know, you might think like, oh, you know, what a wuss or whatever, but I want to put you in this picture. You're in the middle of a jungle. There's nothing for miles but jungle.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
And you don't have ammo. You have a gun, but you don't have any ammunition. And the Malay Rangers do. It's pretty much pitch black. And if a tiger wanted to maul at you, and it was quiet enough to get up close enough to get you, you're pretty much mauled before anybody can do anything about it. And even if somebody does do something about it, that doesn't fix the fact that you got mauled. So I wasn't terrified, but I was pretty scared about that, as others were too. And then, you know, as the night kind of went on, it seemed like, I don't know, it wasn't gonna be that big of a deal. So I eventually think I fell asleep, or I had Firewatch and sat there. I don't remember. It doesn't really matter. But that was pretty freaky, to be completely honest. Yeah, that'll put you on edge. That's not like being at the zoo and seeing an animal that size on the other side of a glass wall or a fence. It's a whole lot different when you're in their realm and they can see and smell, and you know, they know you're there, they can see and smell you and have the ability to get to you, and we don't see them or smell them. We just know that they're out there, we hear them, and that's it. So that's, yeah, one of the days that we were out there, I was reminded of this as I'm telling this, about the insects and bugs and things like that. So this guy we had, who was a cook, and I'm not gonna say that all cooks in the Marine Corps are dumb, because they're not. What I will say, being that I was a recruiter, I know how this works. People with the lower scores don't qualify for a whole lot of jobs in the military, and specifically in the Marine Corps. So their selection is limited. And the way it works is you have a certain amount of MOS groups, basically, that are open during a 3-month period. And then the next 3-month period, it could be totally different, or it could be close to identical, or in some cases it's completely identical. And it goes off the needs of the Marine Corps and how many people are getting out of the Marine Corps in the next 3 months, so a year from that, so that when you're going to boot camp for whatever that job description is that you're going for, somebody's getting out about the time you're going in. So it's a replacement type issue. That's basically how it works. So the problem with not being as smart or not doing as well on your test, sometimes it's just taking not being a good test taker, but generally if your scores are low, then you're limited on what you can do. And one of the jobs that doesn't have a high requirement is being a cook. And again, I knew cooks that were not dumb, that were very intelligent people that wanted to be cooks. And you know, their ASVAB score, which is the score we use, was pretty high, higher than mine, and they wanted to be a cook. So that's what they did. And then others I knew that were not exactly the brightest. Well, this guy that I'm gonna tell you about, I can't even remember his name. He was dumb, like really, really dumb.
You're so dumb. You are really dumb, for real.
And he's from, I don't even remember where in New York. It had to have been like the Bronx. I think it was the Bronx. Or maybe, I don't know. Yeah, I think it was the Bronx. Because he talked like he was hard. He was like this gangster and all this stuff. And he played that role like he's gangster. I don't even know how else to explain it. He was just hard. He was gangster. So he was always bragging about how, you know, he's gangster and this and that. And, you know, nothing scares him. And he ain't worried. He always said, like, I ain't worried about being no jungle dog. There ain't no animals out there carrying guns or nothing. I ain't worried about them. I've been shot at before. And, you know, none of us believe the guy. He just talks just to hear himself talk. And he's really short. He was probably like 5'3", 5'4". And just a mouth, like all mouth. So anyway, so he talked like he's all hard and everything. And, you know, back in the Bronx or whatever, wherever he's, I'm pretty sure it was the Bronx. Back in the Bronx, like, I ruled the streets and blah, 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 like all this crap that he would say. And we get ready to go on the helicopter. Now, mind you, in my job, my MOS, I am traveling by helicopter more often than anything else on deployment anyway. So when we go out, like, I'm rarely riding around in a truck. I'm usually being flown out somewhere, or just because of my job. It's the nature of the job. So I've been in helicopters. I don't know how many times. I can't count how many times I'd been in a helicopter at that point. And we were going on the CH-53 Echoes, which at the time were the fastest. Now there's another one out. But anyway, the Echo is... it's bigger and it's just a beast. Well, I know by being in the CH-53 Echoes multiple times before, some of the capabilities of it, I don't know all the capabilities of it, but I know many of it. They are the most agile and they can actually do a full barrel roll, a combat roll, they call it. Not that they do, because it's not safe, but they can do. And they have not while I was in there anyway. So we're out getting ready to load on this helicopter, and he's talking all this smack like he always does. We're just all kind of just sitting there, and he's just like, ain't nothing, I ain't afraid of no jungle, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, how do you feel about flying? He's like, flying ain't nothing, man. He just keeps talking, just motor mouth, how nothing phases him, nothing scares him, nothing's gonna, whatever. So then we get on, and I happen to know the crew chief. That's the guys that are walking around there and making sure that everybody's strapped in and all the things are working, all the bells and whistles on the helicopter working right. And then when we are on, underneath the helicopter to hook up an external load, they're the ones looking down what we call the hell hole. They look down this hole that the hook comes down from, and they're the eyes and ears for the pilot, because the pilot can't see underneath the helicopter in the middle of the helicopter. So they're the eyes and ears. Anyway, so he's a crew chief. When you see a crew chief freak out, if you're ever on a flight, if you see them freak out, then you know that it's really bad and you probably need to start freaking out too. Start praying and yeah, hope for the best. I see him and he looks over and I hear this kid just blah, 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 blah. And mind you that the rotors are super loud. Like, you can barely hear anything in a helicopter when the rotors are going. And I can still hear this motor mouth talking. So I look over at the crew chief and I give him a hand signal. Like, I put my hand like I'm flying to left and to right, just with one hand. Kind of like a plane would. And then I point to the one that's just talking, and then look back at him like he knew what I was talking about. I was basically saying, like, hey, tell the pilots to take us for a ride, because we got a guy that's just talking. I did the little mouth symbol, you know. And so the crew chief goes up to the pilots real quick, says something to him, turns around, looks at me, smiles, and does the thumbs up. And I'm just like, oh, this is gonna be so awesome. So mind you, we're in Malaysia, and I didn't know what the parameters were for the pilots on what they can and can't do with, you know, airspace and just the way that they operate. I know when we're closer to Okinawa, when we were there in Japan, when you're closer to like the airports and other planes and stuff like that, because of airspace and possible aircraft going near you, you can't do as much. You're limited in what you can do. But being out there, apparently, we had a lot more leniency. and a lot less eyes on us. So he gives me the thumbs up. I'm like, okay, cool, this is gonna be awesome. So then I got the attention of a couple of my buddies, the other Marines were there, my boys. I'm like pointing to them, I'm like, just wait, like I give them that face, like, just wait, you guys have no idea, just wait. And they're like, okay, cool. And most of them had ridden on a helicopter, and this guy, Mr. Gangster, had never been on one, but he's just talking all this smack. So we lift up and we get going, and you know, we're looking around just to see kind of how everybody's doing and how he's doing. And you know, being that I've been on a flight many times on a helicopter, I know some people kind of freak out, some people want to take pictures of everything, you know. Just I took pictures of a lot of stuff, so it just depends on the person and how they are. Some people are terrified of flying or terrified. I don't like heights myself, but being in a helicopter, I'm fine. So we're kind of looking around everybody, and I'm, you know, gauging how people are doing. Seems like everybody's doing all right. He doesn't look, he's not talking anymore, for one, and he looks a little bit concerned, which was awesome. So I look over at the crew chief, and I'm watching, gauging to see what he does. And now we're up pretty high, and we're following a river, and we're in between the ridges, I guess, the ridges on the left and ridges on the right. And my buddy, the crew chief, looks back at me and just nods. So I'm like, okay, here we go. So I'm ready now, I'm braced, and I'm looking at this dude because I want to see his reaction. And the helicopter goes, I don't know degrees very well, but it goes damn near upside down. It is so close. So when we looked out the window, which is normally like if you're sitting in a car and you were to look to your left, right? If you're the driver and you look to your left, that's the window. Normally you would see sky. And maybe if you look down a little bit, you'd see land or water or whatever's below you. When I looked out the window, I saw the tops of trees. And it was awesome. So this thing, and we're getting closer and closer to these trees, by the way. It's like flying straight at the trees. And it's a ridge, like I said, so it's angled, and the helicopter's angled. So we're going straight at the trees. And then I guess the ravine turned to the right. So the pilot turns the helicopter to the right, and we do the exact opposite. So now I'm looking at straight up sky out of my view. Nothing but way up in the sky. And we're going down towards the ground on the other side. And I look over, I mean, I think this is awesome, because this is the most, adventurous of a time I'd ever had in a helicopter. I've never seen them get this ballsy before, ever. So I'm loving it. And I look over at this dude. This dude pulls his helmet off, and he's like getting ready to throw up in it. So we're all kind of bracing ourselves, because this is, like I said, this is not normal. This does not normally happen. So I'm looking at everybody else, they're kind of looking at me, and we're like, this is pretty sweet, but wow, this is crazy. Like, this is the craziest ride I've ever been on. It's not on a track, so it's terrifying and fun at the same time. It's like a thrill. And we look at this dude just like holding his helmet up to his face like he's gonna throw up, and we're all like laughing now. And then eventually the pilot does it again, to the left again, and then to the right again, and then he kind of levels off, and then we dipped almost straight down, like nose down, and then he pulled up, and this dude, as we're pulling up, just starts puking all over in his helmet. So we're all laughing at this dude because he's puking in his helmet, and we're like, oh, you're not so hard now. I don't know if he could hear us or not, but we were laughing. I couldn't hear anybody across from me. We were just yelling it, and pretty much understood what we were saying. So we get out of the helicopter, or we land, we get out of the helicopter and everything, and of course, you know, he's got a save face. He can't look like a little, you know, punk. So he gets out with his helmet, and he dumps his helmet out in the grass, and we get out and we set the MREs that we had to take out there, and we set them down, and then I sit on them, on the box of them, and he's sitting on the ground, and we're all sitting around this water bowl, like a big thing that holds water that we'd lifted out there. And this guy sits down in the grass, and we just start busting on him. Like, dude, how did you puke in your helmet? And he was like, oh, it ain't nothing. I guess I get car sick or something, or air sick, I don't know, but I wasn't scared. And we were like, dude, your eyes were popping out of your head, you were terrified. I wasn't scared, dude, you guys don't even know, you ain't know me. Kept talking like that, you ain't know me, dog, you ain't know me. We're like, all right, whatever, dude. All right, he's like, I'm from the Bronx, dog, I'm from the Bronx, you ain't know me. So He keeps saying that stupid crap and then going on about it. And as he's talking and basically telling us that he's hard and that didn't scare him and none of that, you know, we're just over exaggerating it and we wouldn't be able to handle the hood like he could and all this crap. As he's saying that, we look over while he's talking and we're not really paying attention to him anymore. It's like we're just laughing at him because he's trying to act like he's hard and it's obvious that he's not. And we see this tarantula, like, I mean, that thing was huge, crawling on his leg. So we look at each other and we're like, are we gonna tell him? Should we tell him? And we just keep, we're now looking at him like we're really interested in what he's saying and we're just really waiting to see that he sees this spider. And I forgot who it was, one of the smart asses we were with goes, so how do you feel about spiders, bro? And he's like, dude, I ain't scared, man. I don't know why you guys just messing with me. I ain't scared, dog. I'm from the Bronx. And he's like, no, are you sure? And he's like, dog, you ain't know me. So we're like, okay, so you're not afraid of that tarantula on your leg? He's like, dog, shut up, dog, I ain't scared. And he looks down and he sees it and he screams like a little girl. I've never heard, I don't even want to say grown man because he's not really a grown man, but a 19, 20 year old dude scream like a little girl. And he was like, get it off me, get it off me, like screaming and throwing his hands like around in circles. But he wasn't doing anything. He's just screaming, get it off me, like a little kid would, like a little girl would. So I grab my rifle and I use the butt of my rifle and smack it on his leg and it squashes the spider. And then I hit it again and knocked it off him. And he's screaming and throwing his hands up in the air. And then he gets up. And he runs around in like a circle, like totally disgusted, like a little girl would be, and screaming like, oh, is it off me? Is it off me? And now everybody's like, we're like almost crying. We're laughing so hard. I don't even know how, to be honest, how I butt stroked that spider on his leg because I was laughing so hard when I was doing it. And so we're all laughing. We're like crying. We all have tears in our face because we're laughing so hard. And now he's like super embarrassed. And he has to play that, oh, the Bronx, we ain't got no spiders, dog. We just got huge rats and stuff. We don't got no spiders, dog. I ain't afraid of spiders. That wasn't a spider, man. That thing was huge. That thing could eat me, dog. So of course we laughed at him again. And yeah, that was awesome. We messed with that dude so bad. And he kept playing the, he's from the Bronx and he's hard and he's gangster. And every time he'd talk, like, cause he always wanted to impress the girls that were out there. So he had a couple female Marines out there and none of them were into him, but most of them, I think they're probably had husbands or boyfriends back home or something. So, or maybe back on the island. And he's trying to impress them, talking about how he does this and he does that. And as soon as he'd start talking to females, especially when we got on ship and he's talking like the Navy girls that were there, as soon as he starts talking about this, that, and the other thing, we're like, oh, why don't you tell him about how you threw up in your helmet when you're on the helicopter? And all of a sudden, just the whole tone changes. And he's like, dog, what's up, dog? Why you got a cock block like that, dog? And then we just laugh and be like, whatever, dude. Because you're hard, bro. You're hard. You're like gangster. You're gangster. And he's like, I am gangster. Like, yeah, you're so gangster. So anyway, that happened. And then I'm trying to think what, I don't think anything else happened with that guy because he's a cook. So he pretty much, he didn't go with us everywhere. And I don't remember where he went during that time. I don't know if he went back or what, but I wouldn't be surprised because he couldn't hack the jungle thing. But it was a good time for the rest of us laughing at him. So anyway, so the next thing that I'm going to talk about here was when I got put with recon and a topographical intel guy, basically geographical intel, topographical, whatever you want to call them. Basically, they look at maps and they do the intel for satellite imaging down for the terrain that we have and stuff. And they're supposed to know the terrain and know the ins and outs of where we're going and all that. And I don't remember his name, but anyway, I got put with a bunch of recon guys and him. And our job was to go out and get reconnaissance from this group of, it was actually our infantry guys, some of our infantry guys that we were training with, to see if we could get information from them without them knowing and bring it back. But the first thing we had to do was get out there and do like a site survey. We basically had to get up there and look and recon the area, do a reconnaissance of the area, and then go back and tell our guys what the deal is, like how many people they got on post, how many people they got, you know, walking the wire or doing a perimeter security, and then what kind of rifles they had, what size element are we going against, what's the terrain like, all that stuff. And it was really cool, especially with being with the geographical intel guy, because he's got intel already, and then we're just like cross-referencing it with what we see, and we get to find out how accurate or inaccurate it is. And a lot of it, if it's from a satellite, like it's a lot of jungle, so you can't really see the terrain in many areas unless it's the trees are, you know, cut down or it's near a river or something. So a lot of it's with your eyes. So we had a little bit of intel before we got there, just based on the terrain, you know, the elevation of where we are and little hills and stuff around us. But other than that, it's kind of, you're kind of going in there blind. So we finally go and we see the area and we see them and we're watching them, and we got binos, binoculars, we're looking at them and we're writing, taking notes. And then we go back and we let them know the situation that we had. And the next step from there was going out and actually planning an attack and then attacking them and then getting those documents that they had and leaving with them. If possible, doing it without attacking, going in quietly, getting them, coming back. We knew that was pretty much not gonna happen. Well, again, we went with a bunch of people like cooks and some other MOSs that don't usually go out in the jungle or in whatever, in the field much. And some of them, as I said, like that cook, are really, really, really dumb. Like, really dumb. So what ended up happening is we get about 1 kilometer away and we're being super quiet because we know how close they are, and we keep telling them to be quiet, and they're talking like really loud and they're breaking branches and they're just being completely noisy. So we're like, oh, well, the element of surprise is gone. And they, and you know, the guys that were going after, the infantry guys, they already knew we were gonna attack, but they didn't know what day and they didn't know what time. They just knew between this day and this day, at some point, you're going to get attacked by these guys. And we were not infantry, by the way. We were just a bunch of regular MOSs going against Lima 3-3 from the infantry from Hawaii. So we're thinking, well, this is gonna go badly for us. This is gonna go really badly for us. And we did have the recon guys with us, so that helped a lot. So me, the recon guys that I was with, and a couple others, we veered off to the left and flanked, and the rest of them were going straight up towards the front of this thing. So we went around the side, ended up getting up on this ravine, and on top of this little area, we grabbed the stuff that we could that was our quote unquote intel, and we booked it back out of there without getting quote unquote shot, right? And the enemy force somehow didn't see us because of everybody else. And when we got back, they went and we did a debrief and everything. They pretty much told us we were stupid, we messed up, we did this and that. And then they're like, they're basically telling us we did a horrible job with our execution. And then I held up the folder that has the stuff we were supposed to get, and they're like, you guys got that? And I'm like, yeah, we did. And then they're like, well, did you guys get the right one? And we didn't know if there was right or wrong. So we open it up and we look at it, whatever, and we're like, how did you guys get this? And we're like, what do you mean, how do we get it? Well, they were fighting, we flanked them, we went around the other corner, we climbed up the little ravine there that looked like it was almost impossible to climb. We got the document protector little thing and the folder, and we took off the same way we came in. And they were like, what? Are you serious? We're like, yeah, we went. And then we showed them like on the map where we went and everything, and they're like, oh, we thought for sure, because there was two sets, we didn't know this, and they grabbed the wrong one. So they left a fake one is what they thought, but they actually left the real one. So we ended up getting the right one, which was really awesome. Ended up being really good for us in the end. We got kudos from a couple of the staff and the officers there, and then of course the infantry guys were pissed at us because we made them look bad, and we're not infantry and those guys are infantry, so it made them look really bad. But again, it was training. They could have been like, whatever, we don't really care, we're not taking this seriously, so whatever. But if you know grunts, they're pretty alpha male-ish, so I don't think they'd want us to win even if it was just quote unquote training. So, I don't know. Take it for what it is. I had a lot of fun. If I could do it all over again, I would. It was awesome. That was some of the funnest times I had, was in Malaysia.
Are you like a crazy person?
So, I'm going to end it here. I got a meeting I'm going to go to. I'm about 5 minutes away. Hopefully you guys like this. I will elaborate more on the rest of the deployment. Probably won't get too much in on Malaysia. I think I'm pretty much done with Malaysia now. So I'll talk more about the next deployments coming up. And I'd like to say hi to you guys that are my Oki boys, the Okinawa guys. Some of you that I was with, some of you that I wasn't with. The ones that I wasn't with, this resonates with you. I've heard from a couple of you already. This resonates with you, and I think that's awesome. I wish that I could write my book now, but I think this is what's helping me with my transition of writing my book, is getting all this out there and then moving from a voice platform to my book. And then I can kind of fine tune some of the things. And this is kind of, a lot of this is random, and then I can go back and do it all in chronological order instead of kind of just randomizing this. But hopefully I keep you guys motivated, and hopefully you guys give me a review, a good one. A 5-star review and rating would be greatly appreciated. Thank you for all the support that I get from you guys and girls, from all of you. I really appreciate it.